So welcome, as the school board member, and all eyes will be on Tallahassee for the next 2 months to see what comes out of it. What would you like to hear from state legislators, Ms. Regalado?
Well, this session is going to be very interesting. The governor's budget is very positive, a very different place from where we were 2 years ago. And the dynamic in our legislature is very different. Our day delegation is very young. It doesn't have a lot of influence. There's also the issue between the Senate and the House. There's no longer a supermajority. So the governor has become a lot more important than he was in past sessions. So we're very excited about that, and we hope that the legislative session is positive on both fronts. There are a few bills that we're concerned about, but I think what's going to dominate the conversation is going to be the expansion of the Affordable Care Act, which there still isn't really a committee finding on that. And it's interesting that we're seeing certain players within the Republican Party criticize the governor on that, and also on his budgetary determination as to increase for teachers, because it's actually 180 from where we were 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. This was a governor that was talking about merit pay, and yet the increase are not in the merit pay paradigm. He's just saying $2,500 to be allocated for every teacher. And the legislature has some issues with that, because if you'll remember, what they did is they tracked the Obama plan. Race to the Top had a merit pay component that came with funding. So they jumped on that and instituted merit pay, which starts this year. So we're going to see how that all flushes out. And then I could tell you a little bit about the bills that we're concerned about. But allocation-wise, I think we're going to be fine.
Well, I'm going to get into some of those. But I can imagine 2 years ago saying Governor Rick Scott was probably a bad word in Miami-Dade County. But the political transformation, as you said, has kind of been remarkable. Is there a feeling from Tallahassee that they understand, at least the governor understands, the needs of public educators more than he used to?
I think so. I've had the opportunity to meet with him several times. As you know, I'm a Republican, but I supported Alex Sink. There are very few Republicans that did that. And there was a lot of criticism during that election. I had met with the governor when he was a candidate, and he was pretty clear about what he thought about public education. I think at that time he was very insulated. The people that were supporting him were not pro public education people. That has changed. I think he's learned more about how Tallahassee works. Now there's a broader group of people, and he's been very good about reaching out to the districts. He started last year having different meetings in schools. He went directly and spoke to teachers. He started going just to charter schools and then decided to go to public schools too. So a lot of what we're seeing in the budget, the conversation about school supplies, the conversation about the pay raises, the comments that he's made regarding compliance with CORE, which is our biggest issue, mm-hmm. One that we hope our legislators will talk about this session, but there's been almost no conversation about that. And I think from an educational point of view, that's our biggest challenge. How are we going to transition into CORE? How are we going to pay for it? Beyond the easy part of it, which is riding along with the rest of the nation, how is Florida going to step up to the plate? There's also been some changes in the Department of Education that I think are very interesting, and we hope that the leadership there is better than it was in the past. We're very sad that Bobby Martinez stepped down, because he was really a fantastic voice for Miami-Dade County. The people that are there now are a little insular, but we hope that they'll get with the program.
So many changes. We talked about the governor's view on this. The FCATs becoming Common Core standards now for Florida public education. There's a new Secretary of Education. There really have been a lot of changes, but one thing you just mentioned that there hasn't been a lot of talk about, the transition from the FCAT to Common Core standards. And I have a pair of teenagers who would probably like to know all about that. And so,
I have about 50,000 teachers that are dying to know how that's going to work out. The good news is, and listen, I think everyone agrees that the FCAT had its place in Florida history. But pretty much even the people who were shoving it down our throats are now saying it's good that it goes. It just has such a bad reputation and had such a negative impact on how curriculum was created in Florida, that I think we all agree that you need to have a test, but this is not the test. In most states, the way that the exams were set up is the legislators approved a formula for curriculum, and then a test was created. In Florida, it was backwards. They told us what the FCAT was, and then we scrambled to meet it curriculum-wise. And that limited a lot of things, and it was really limiting in the sense of technology. We couldn't use the Khan Institute. We couldn't use everything, even information from WLRN, and PBS, because if it didn't fit into the Sunshine State Standards or later on the new Sunshine State Standards, we didn't want to confuse our students. So now with CORE, the lobbying power that's held regarding content and textbooks in Florida is going to disappear, because now we can access whatever state. There's many different providers. There's a lot more competition, and we're going to be able to compare state to state how everyone is doing. So in states like Alabama, where what they did is they made their exam super easy so that they could say that their education was fantastic, now we'll all be on the same playing field. So in that sense, I think it's spectacular, and there are a lot of CORE compliance apps out there where teachers can see what the difference is, what the old standards were and what the new standards were. But still, teachers are going to have to recraft curriculum. And that takes a certain amount of time. So we hope that they don't leave it to the last minute. And come August, we're scrambling like last year with the FCAT changes.
This is a good thing, because we've heard about Florida kids graduating from high school not ready for college. So do we need these new standards? Are these important that these kick in now? And will it help Florida kids coming out of high school be more competitive?
It will help. It will help. It's going to help a lot for several different reasons. But another conversation that needs to be had after this conversation about CORE is making the K-12 system work with the university system. A lot of the compliance issues that we have to do with math. Our kids are not taking the math that they need depending on the college that they go to. So then they have to take remedial classes to catch up. A lot of students, even in Miami-Dade County schools, do not take the adequate math by the time they get to fifth or sixth grade to get into many of our own magnet programs, because there's a disconnect there between what the state requires and what different programs requires. So that's a problem that we're going to continue having. It isn't so much that they don't know, it's that they don't know the right material. Now, when you get into students that are having problems with reading and comprehension, that is something that we need to deal with a lot earlier on. And our studies show that in many cases, what you're dealing with is a failure to diagnose a learning disability. Not necessarily that we're dealing with children that have bad teachers or had not been exposed to the proper curriculum. It's just that there is a learning disability, and by the time there was consideration about a diagnosis, it was diagnosed as a behavioral problem, and we never got to correcting it, whether it's dyslexia, ADD, ADHD, even autism, when we talk about really high-functioning children that have Asperger's.
How about this parent trigger law, which, and you're shaking
my
your head.
Favorite
yeah,
topic.
They're going to be talking about that in Tallahassee, and certainly state educators seem, state legislators rather, seem to be on board with this. How does that sound here in South Florida?
You know, in South Florida, there's no need for parent trigger. Parent trigger is a movement that has its place on the national scale, and maybe in some small towns in what northern Florida, where parents don't have a lot of options. The idea is that a school that is failing, the parents are then given the opportunity to take it over. The reality is that there's interests that are now involved to sort of take over schools. In Florida, there's very strict regulations regarding F schools. We have done fantastic work with F schools and really turning those schools around, and have found that the key to it is not necessarily just changing teachers, which is what Parent Trigger focuses on. Parent Trigger is an anti-union movement that just comes in and turns a public school into a charter school. The concern is that the facility then, which was public and was always public, now becomes private. And now this becomes a money-making venture. And they have the ability to exclude students.
Right.
Public schools don't have the option to do that. So, you know, we're going to have that conversation about parent trigger. But on a larger scale, we're going to be having
in general.
Exactly. We're going to be having the conversation about equity. Same standards. Why do charter schools have different standards? Why are charter schools allowed more flexibility than public schools? And in the case of parent trigger, interestingly enough, if parent trigger is important, then why don't we trigger charter schools? So what happens with failing charter schools? Because we do have failing charter schools, and we have charter schools that are not meeting their economic responsibilities, charter schools that are breaching their contracts with parents. So, you know, if you're looking at parent participation and making sure that parents are happy, then it should cut both ways.
So what are some of the other priorities for the Miami-Dade School Board right now?
Well, you know, sadly, funding is always our number one priority. Yeah. We have to always go up there and deal with funding. Last session, we had to deal with parent trigger, which is a big deal because we have invested so much money in our schools and in our programs. This year, we'll be dealing with parent trigger again. Interestingly enough, the person who's carrying it this year is Representative Carlos Trujillo, which has little to no experience with education. So that's a weird choice, and we'll see how that pans out. But there's also a digital learning bill, which is interesting because, you know, we have all these conversations in Florida about how important it is to grow our economy and accountability. And then this digital learning bill pops up and they don't even have to have an office in the state. So you wonder, well, where is this money going to go? All of a sudden, it's bad enough that we already have the transition where, you know, FTE money is going to all these different allocations. Now we're looking at FTE money going completely out of the state. So I think that that's going to be interesting. Also, there's a few bills regarding online sales tax, which we're following closely. This was a conversation that we started last session. As you know, we get our funding through different buckets is the easiest way to explain it. And one that has been decreasing for many years is PICO. Mm. PICO was the money that was used for construction, and that was based on a tax to landlines. Nobody has a landline anymore, so PICO has been in decline the last 6 years. The last 3 years, all the PICO money has gone to charter schools. So last session, they introduced a bill, which we expect this session too, giving charter schools the opportunity to take our capital outlay money, which is interesting because our capital outlay money is used exclusively to pay out bonds. It's not money that we're building, which is why we had the bond initiative on the ballot, because mm-hmm. we don't have money for construction. We had to bond out.
Oh, wait, now you've reminded me of that. So how are you guys planning on spending that money, and what are the most important things that you'll be working on now that you have the funds to take care of some of these issues and fixing these broken schools?
Well, you know, the bond initiative, I was a big supporter of. I'm currently the chair of facilities and construction. I was the chair of facilities and construction when it was a very, very sad and boring committee. There was nothing really to talk about. Now I get to talk about the bond, so I'm very excited. You know, this bond had such amazing support, and I always have to start by thanking everyone that voted for it. We had a 68% approval rating on this bond, the highest bond approval rating in the history of Miami-Dade County. And I really want to thank all of our partners and everyone who listened to us go on and on about the poor state of our schools. We had our first workshop where we talked about what our priorities are going to be. We've already laid out the years that we're going to be fixing schools. It's going to all be done in 6 years. The majority of the heavy lifting is during the summer, obviously, when our schools are closed. Mm-hmm. But in the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about the technology component. We have $70 million from the federal government for E-rate. So we are going to be having Wi-Fi in all of our schools, but we couldn't implement that E-rate program without fixing the structure because a lot of these schools were 50, 60, 70 years old. So they didn't have the electrical necessary to comply with E-rate. So now what we're looking at is the schools under $2 million that we can do as soon as possible. And we're going to roll out technology for all the schools in the next 2 years. So parents are going to see dramatic changes. There's going to every school will be touched, all 500 schools in Miami-Dade County. The newer ones, we're making those changes as soon as possible because we can do those faster. And then other ones like Arbondale, which was one of the poster children for this bond initiative, which has a lot of termite damage and a lot of issues, that one's going to be touched in year number one. So we're going to be talking more about that. And then what we're looking at is a leasing program for the technology. That's going to be the big conversation in the next few weeks, because I don't want to go out and buy thousands and thousands of smart boards that are going to be obsolete in 2 years. So what I'm asking the board to do is consider projecting devices. We're negotiating lease and buyback agreements so that we can keep replenishing the technology because we need to move as fast as it does.
Finally, you come from a famous political family. Your dad is currently the mayor of Miami, Tomás Regalado, you seem to be following in his footsteps as a Miami-Dade school board member. You certainly sound like you're on top of all the issues in and out of the school board. What about your future in politics? Does it end here?
Well, I love what I'm doing. I'm very proud of my father. He's taught me a lot. I always tell people he's such a fantastic role model. So many years at the city, a wonderful policy-minded individual. The two of us had the pleasure of being in D.C. earlier this week. We were both lobbying on different issues. It's great. Like he says, we always save on hotel rooms because we can room together and then we share the cab to the Hill. But we have a fantastic relationship. The city has partnered with us to help us with so many schools. It's been fantastic and very exciting. And now we're working with the parks also. But, you know, we have a lot to do. The bond initiative is a tremendous amount of work. I'm committed to seeing that through, and we'll see what happens. As you know, one of the reasons that I'm at the school board is because my daughter, Isabella, is autistic, and we're doing fantastic things. We're going to be rolling out a great program in September for all autistic children, and Autism Speaks and several organizations, UMCard, are helping us with that. So I'm very excited. You know, Miami-Dade County Schools has done so much in the 2.5 years that I've been there. I'm so proud. I was so proud to be in New York and receive the Broad Prize with the rest of my colleagues. And we still have so much more to do. So for now, I'm just your school board member. I'll be in Tallahassee most of the week of March lobbying for a lot of these issues and making sure that there's a lot of different things that get, you know, put into bills at the last minute that are very interesting for us. In D.C., we're also following the immigration bill very closely. That's why I was there, because there's, you know, there's always questions as to how we're going to comply with teaching English, and we want to make sure that the school system and our adult learning programs are taken into consideration in our citizenship programs. So there's a lot of interesting thing happening. He has an election this year, so I'll be campaigning for him.
I was going to say that. He's up this year.
He's up this year. He's I think he's done a fantastic job, but then again, I'm biased. I'm his biggest fan. I'm very excited about he's going to have the address for the state of the city soon and his plan for the next 4 years. We're doing great things. The city has had tremendous growth. And then locally, too, I mean, I sit on the board of WLRN. I love what we're doing here. I also sit on the executive committee of the ARST. We're doing fantastic work there, and we're really reaching out. Right now we have a program where every fifth grader comes to the ARST to view Rock Odyssey. I think we have to expand that. We have the Museum of Science opening and the Art Museum opening soon, so hopefully we can involve our students in that. You know, I was born and raised here in a Miami that had very little access to the arts, and it's fantastic now that my kids that are 7 and 8 are growing up in a Miami where we can provide them with a culture of art. So we hope that that we can do that for all our kids and give them access to the wonderful resources that we have here in Miami-Dade County.
And good schools too, right?
Great schools, great programs. And we are going to be also talking about expanding our language programs this year, which is something that parents are always calling us about. I worked on the MAST expansion, which was somewhat controversial when it occurred, but it's gone very, very well. And now we're going to be talking about MAST participating in the master plan of Virginia Key. So we're doing that with the city, and we're very excited about that plan.
Raquel Regalado, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.